Okay, we're studying from the Exodus last week. Stan discussed the giving of the manna from heaven and water from a rock that helped the Israelites sustain life. And it's an example just to show that God will take care of His people if people will allow God to do that. We have a tendency to want to trust in our own, in ourselves, and in many cases reject God until we are in trouble, and then we decide that that's the time that we need to talk to our Father and ask for help. As a general rule, that's the way mankind is. We saw that happen after 9/11, where many people started going back to worship, whether they're right or wrong, whether they felt that they needed God at that time, and then after a few months the desire to serve God waned. So that's the way children of Israel were. They were under bondage in Egypt, and God wanted to relieve them of that bondage, so He used Moses to lead them out of that bondage. Well, they hadn't gone too far when they got to the Red Sea, and they started complaining about God bringing them out of their maybe not so comfort zone, but into a place where they were going to be killed by the Egyptians when God delivered them. When they complained about lack of food, God sent the manna from heaven. When they wanted meat, God sent the quail. And when they complained about water, God instructed Moses to strike rock, and rock and water came forth, freely giving the children of Israel what they needed. Tonight we're going to look at the Israelites at Mount Sinai. After crossing the Red Sea, the children of Israel traveled southeast down to the southern part of the peninsula of Sinai. And over in Exodus, the 19th chapter, the first verse says that in the third month, after the children of Israel had come out of the land of Egypt, on the same day they came to the wilderness of Sinai. Verse 2, for they had departed from Rephidim and come to the desert of Sinai and camped in the wilderness. So Israel camped there before the mountain. Although there's a few trade routes that cross the Sinai Peninsula, there wasn't very much water, few springs existed, and there wasn't much in the way of food that would sustain them. The peninsula of Sinai is some 200, is a huge triangle-shaped body of land, 260 miles long, 150 miles wide, and roughly 22,500 square miles. If we put together the land region of states of New Hampshire, Vermont, in Massachusetts, that would be equivalent to the size of the Sinai Peninsula. The upper region consisted of a tableland that was about 2,500 feet above sea level. Down in the southern region where Mount Sinai was located, the elevation of the various mountains run 7,500 to 8,500 feet in altitude. So when we start reading about the events surrounding Mount Sinai, the times that Moses climbed that, start to think about climbing 7,500 or so feet every time he goes up there to talk with God. And it can be a pretty tiring experience if you've ever done any mountain climbing. I did once in Alaska, and it wasn't anywhere near 7,000 feet. By the time we got up to 2,000 feet, that's all that old Bob Ward wanted. And it took probably 4 or 5 hours to get up to the top. Because there was a snowdrift in this little valley down the mountain, we put our parkers down, slid down. It didn't take about 15, 20 minutes to get to the bottom. And that was a relief. So I can imagine what Moses endured having to climb that mountain. And Moses, verse 3 of 19, and Moses went up to God, and the Lord called to him from the mountain, saying, "Thus you shall say to the house of Jacob, and tell the children of Israel, you have seen what I did to the Egyptians, and how I bore you on eagle's wings and brought you to myself." Verse 5, "Now therefore, if you will indeed obey my voice and keep my covenant, and you shall be a special treasure to me above all people, for all the earth is mine. And you shall be to me a kingdom, a priest, and a holy nation." Well, what did Israel say to that? They rejected it, right?
No, they said, "We will do it."
That's right. Down in verse 8, "All that the Lord has spoken, we will do." If you turn over to chapter 24, we see the same thing. Down in verse 3, "All the words which the Lord has spoken," or "the Lord has said, we will do." You drop down to verse 7. "All that the Lord has said, we will do and be obedient." It's easy, isn't it? It's easy to commit to something. Just as God required the Israelites to be obedient to Him, He requires us to be obedient to Him also. When it came time, Moses again was called upon the mountain, and there he was given the law. We have the Ten Commandments stated in chapter 20. Is that all that Moses received while he was up there? They want to put a lot of emphasis on the Ten Commandments, whether they're binding today or not. Is that all that Moses received while he was on the mount? What are you shaking your head for, Dick? You shaking your head?
Answer no.
Okay, he did not receive just the Ten Commandments, did he? He received the law. He received the Mosaic law, the Old Testament law that was to go into effect. After you move on from chapter 20, where we have the Ten Commandments given, we find various types of law, or different parts of the law that were given. Now, it's expanded later in the Pentateuch, because the Exodus actually is detailed in five books. Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, or four books, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. And the law is actually detailed more in some of those books than what it is here in Exodus. But there's different parts of the law that he writes about in Exodus. As an example, in chapter 21, we have that portion of the law concerning servants. We have that portion of the law concerning violence and animal control laws. And then 22, responsibility for property, moral and ceremonial principles, justice for all. In 23, the law of Sabbaths. In 23, the feast days that were to take place in 23. And all of these laws that was given to Moses, Moses gave to the people. He called the elders together. He told the elders what was what God had said. And there's a read among them to go in chapter 24, and they agreed with all of it. He goes on in chapter 25, and he talks about the sanctuary, the offerings, the Ark of the Testimony, the things that were to go into the tabernacle, like the table of showbread, the gold lampstand. Then in 26, he talks about the tabernacle. We're going to be talking about that a little bit more, beginning in chapter 35. But he describes all of these things that were to be made. And they were to be made to God's specification. Just like the ark, when Noah and his sons built the ark, God told them how to make it. He told them what measurements to make everything. And it was to God's specifications. Same thing is true with the tabernacle and the things that were to go into the tabernacle. To move over to chapter 32. Still, the children of Israel are at the base of Mount Sinai. What happens in chapter 32? With all these people who said they were going to do what God said to told them to do.
They get bored.
They what?
Get bored.
How bored did they get?
To the point of forgetting God.
Yes, they did, didn't they? They forgot God. How long had Moses been up in the mountain?
Cleared the number of 40 days and 40 nights.
Did what?
He's in the earlier here, did I read 40 days and 40 nights?
Yes, that is correct. He'd been up there a little over a month. So they got bored. They got a good board on them that they went that far in 30 days. Chapter 32, verse 1 says, "Now when the people saw that Moses delayed coming down from the mountain, the people gathered together to Aaron and said to him, 'Come make us gods,'" or a god, depending upon the version that you have, "'that should go before us, or as far as this Moses, the man who called himself out of the land of Egypt, we do not know what has become of him.' And Aaron said to them, 'Break off all the golden earrings which you are, or which are in the ears of your wives, your sons, and your daughters, and bring them to me.' So the people broke off golden earrings which were in their ears, and brought them to Aaron." Verse 4, "And he received gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with it, and they engraved it to him." Now notice what Moses tells us here in verse 4. "He received the gold from their hand, and he fashioned it with an engraving tool and made a molded calf. Then they said, 'This is your God, O Israel, that brought you out of the land of Egypt.'" I don't know what type of influence the worship of the Egyptians had on the Israelites. But I think it's kind of funny. Or would be funny if it wasn't so serious, that there were 35 deities known to the Egyptians. One of them was in the form of a cow. Hathor, or Hathor, who was the sky goddess, the goddess of love, dance, and alcohol. Now keep that in mind. So they make this golden calf and claim that this is the God who brought them out of the land of Egypt. So when Aaron saw it, he built an altar before it. And Aaron made a proclamation and said, "Tomorrow is the feast of to the Lord." Then they rose early on the next day, offered burnt offerings, and brought peace offerings. And the people sat down to eat and drink and rose up to play. Now that's exactly what that God, goddess Hathor from Egypt was called. Now whether that was the influence that led to this golden calf or not, I don't know. But I think it's very possible. So what happens after that?
Well, God told them, "Well, I'm down."
Better get back down there. So Moses takes the tablets that God has given to him. And God has written on these tablets, both sides of it. Moses takes them down with him. Who does Moses take up on the mountain with him? I don't think he went in the presence of God. As a matter of fact, that was
Joshua.
But yeah, very seriously, doubt that Joshua went with him into the presence of God, but he went up on the mountain with him. And when they were coming down from the mountain, Joshua says in verse 17, "There's a noise of war in the camp. But Moses said, it is not the voice of those who shout in victory, nor is it the voice of those who cry out in defeat, but the voice of those who sing that I hear. So it was as soon as he came near the camp that he saw the calf and the dancing. So Moses' anger became hot, and he cast the tablets out of his hands and broke them at the foot of the mountain. So he goes and confronts Aaron with it. Verse 21. And Moses said to Aaron, what did the people do to you that you have brought so great a sin upon them? Think about that. Every time I read that, that you've brought so great a sin, there's a degrees of sin. Is it? I mean, this is, according to Moses, was a great sin.
There are degrees of sin in that you can do a sin that sears your conscience so much that you're not coming back to God.
Technically speaking, like he said, there are degrees of sin. All sin is equal in the sight of God. You violate His laws, you've committed a sin. But I think what Moses is getting at here is, having brought such a great sin upon them, is the effect that it has. Some sins affect you and only you, maybe somebody else. But sins like this affected the whole of the congregation.
I think that's right. These are the same people that said they were going to do what God had told them to do, and they did not do that. They did not do it. Okay, so verse 22, so Aaron said to Moses, did I let the anger of my Lord become hot? You know the people that they are set on evil. For they said to me, make us gods that shall go before us. As for this Moses, the man who brought us out of the land of Egypt, we did not know what has become of him. And I said to them, whoever has any gold, let them break it off. So they gave it to me, and I cast it into the fire, and this calf came out. That's a little bit different from what we read over in the other verse, where he had tools that fashioned that calf. But the way this reads, he's claiming, I just cast the gold into the fire and boom, out popped this calf. Well, that's not entirely true here. Now when Moses saw that the people were under strain, for Aaron had not restrained them to their shame among their enemies, then Moses stood in the entrance of the camp and said, whoever is on the Lord's side, let him come to me. Who came to Moses at that time?
Son of the Levite.
It was the Levites. And he told the Levites to put your sword on your side, go through the camp. Didn't make any difference whether it was brother or who it might be. Well, down in verse 27, let every man put his sword on his side and go in now from the entrance to entrance throughout the camp, and let every man kill his brother, every man his companion, and every man his neighbor. So the sons of Levi did according to the Lord of Moses, and about 3,000 men of the people fell that day. We read about that over in the New Testament. Probably. They had turned their back upon what God had told them to do and what they said they were going to do. To please God, we must be faithful to Him and to His will. Psalms 31, verses 23 and 24. O love the Lord, all you His saints, for the Lord preserves the faithful and fully repays the proud person. Be of good courage, and He shall strengthen your heart, all you who hope in the Lord. And that's where our hope should be, is in the Lord. Peter writes, therefore, since Christ suffered for us in the flesh, arm yourselves also with the same mind. For he who has suffered in the flesh has ceased from sin, that he no longer should live in the rest of his time in the flesh for lust of men, but for the will of God. That's how we're supposed to live. And that's what God required of the Israelites too. Any questions or comments about the time at Mount Sinai?
It's surprising that Aaron was with Moses in the beginning and saw this thing that God did for him. He just gave it. He just, okay, we want a calf. Okay, go get your earrings and all the gold. You know, I mean, it surprises me that he did that. He had no confidence whatsoever in God.
I don't know that he didn't have confidence in him, or as he pointed out, you know, the people, that they are set on evil. You know, you buck the system, or you fight for those that try to buck the system. Fight and you fight and you fight. You know, you just wear yourself down. Maybe Aaron wore himself down. I don't know. But he definitely knew who Moses was, and he knew where Moses had gone. But so did the people that were there also. Okay, anything else? Okay, chapter 33. Then the Lord said to Moses, depart and go up from here, you and the people whom you have brought out of the land of Egypt, to the land which I swore to Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, saying, in your descendants I will give it. So, after this event with the calf, God tells them to leave this Mount Sinai. Where did they go?
They were told to go to Canaan.
Well, that's where the ultimate destination was. But you look down chapter 33, verse 6. So the children of Israel stripped themselves of ornaments by Mount Horeb. Mount Horeb wasn't too far from Mount Sinai. They are still in the wilderness of Sinai. And they're there, actually there for about 9 months. The reason we know that is because they're making the things that are necessary for the tabernacle. They're making the garments for Aaron and the priest. And And all of that is to be dedicated on the first day of the next year, which is 9 months. And the reason I say that is because when we started over in chapter 19, verse 1, 3 months had already passed from the time that they left each time they come to Mount Sinai. Okay, in chapter 35. Down in verse 4. Moses spoke to the congregation of the children of Israel, saying, "This is the thing which the Lord commanded, saying, take from among you an offering to the Lord, whoever is of a willing heart, let him bring it as an offering to the Lord, gold, silver, and bronze, blue and purple and scarlet yarn, fine linen thread, and goat's hair, ram skins dyed red, badger skins, and oxeye wood, oil for the light and spices for the anointing oil and for sweet incense, onyx stones and stones to be set in the ephod and in the breastplate." So Moses is asking for them now to bring stuff that they need to make the tabernacle, the utilities, and the furniture that goes into the tabernacle, and the clothing for Aaron and the other priests, and for the oil that was to burn continuously, and for the incense that was to be used. Down in verse 30, Moses said to the children of Israel, "See, the Lord is called by name," and if y'all want to pronounce that, Zel-Lil, "the son of Uriah, the son of Hur." Why can't they give him a name simple like that? "From the tribe of Judah, and he has filled him," or he, God has filled him with the Spirit of God in wisdom and understanding and knowledge of all manner of works and workmanship. So God did not, or at least Moses did not have blueprints of what was to be made. He told Moses what he was going to make over in verses or chapters 21 and following. He told them what was going to be made. Now he's got artisans, two listed by name, this Bezalel, and then down in verse 34, Aholiab, the son of Ahishabek of the tribe of Dan. These were the artisans who were to oversee making all the furniture that was to go into the tabernacle and the clothing that was to be used by the priests. Down in verse 3 of chapter 36 is a term that it's very interesting. "And they received from Moses all the offerings which the children of Israel had brought for the work and service of making the sanctuary. So they continued bringing to him free will offerings every morning." You find that interesting? What about our giving on the first day of the week? How are we instructed to give?
You brought
Do what?
As we prosper.
As we prosper and with a, what kind of heart?
Heart.
And that's, isn't that what we're seeing happen here with these people? Aren't they giving of their jewelry? They got so much. They got so much that Bezalel and Hoholiab said to Moses, the people bring much more than enough for the service of the work which the Lord commanded us to do. Imagine what type of work, how we could spread the gospel if we were doing that. So Moses gave a command, commandment, and they caused it to be proclaimed throughout the camp, saying, let thee the man and the woman do any more work for the offering of the sanctuary, and the people were restrained from bringing. For the material they had was sufficient for all the work to be done, indeed too much. Verse 7. Beginning in verse 8, see the building of the tabernacle, verse 30, or chapters 37, 38, and on through chapter 40, all the things being made that God had required of the children of Israel. So Moses saw to it that the generosity and careful obedience that the children of Israel supplied was put to the work that God required them to do. In 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 5. 2 Corinthians 8, verses 1 through 5. Paul writes, moreover, brethren, we make known to you the grace of God bestowed on the churches of Macedonia, that in the great trial of affliction, the abundance of their joy and their deep poverty abounded in the riches of their liberality. For I bear witness, and according to their ability, yes, and beyond their ability, they were freely willing, imploring us with much urgency that we should receive the gift and the fellowship of the ministry to the saints. And not only as we had hoped, but they gave first gave themselves to the Lord, and then to us by the will of God. That's the way God wants us to be. Just as the Israelites were generous and obedient in their giving, God wants us to be also. In Philippians 4, beginning in verse 14, nevertheless you have done well that you shared in my distress. Now you Philippians know also that in the beginning of the gospel that I departed from Macedonia, no church shared with me concerning giving and receiving, but you only. For even in Thessalonica, you sent aid once and again for my necessities. Not that I seek the gift, but I seek the fruit that abounds to your account. Indeed, I have all and abound. I am full, having received from Epaphroditus the things sent from you, a sweet smelling aroma, an acceptable sacrifice, well pleasing to God. And may God, and my God shall supply all your need according to his riches and glory by Jesus Christ. Now, to our God and Father be glory forever and ever. So, two examples in the New Testament of the generosity of the first century Christians and their giving, and how we should follow the example of those. Any questions or comments about the bullet for Mount Sinai or the tabernacle? Dick?
You read there all the things they gave for the tabernacle, but where did they get those things? Well, we know that we probably got much of that is from in Exodus 12 and 33 to 36, where it says, this is after the firstborn were killed. And the Egyptians urged the people that they might send them out of the land of Hate, where they said, "We shall all be dead." So the people took their dough, for it was leavened, having their kneading bowls bound up in their clothes on their shoulders. Now the children of Israel had done according to the word of Moses, and they asked from the Egyptians articles of silver, articles of gold, and clothing. And the Lord had given the people favor in the sight of Egyptians, so they granted them what they requested. Thus they plundered the Egyptians. So they got a lot of that from the Egyptians, and then they gave it up.
So they wasn't in poverty per se when they were living in Egypt, were they? Anything else? Yeah.
One thing that's interesting to see is you look at Aaron with the baby cow, and Moses asked about it. He's like, "Well, they wanted this, and they gave the guards, put it in the barn, and this cow just came out." Similar to what Adam said in the garden. God asked, "What have you done?" "Well, it's the one you gave me. She gave me this apple, and I just happened to eat it." And cast, you know, we see both in Adam and Aaron that they cast the responsibility, accountability to someone else, and they are punished severely for it. Mm-hmm. We look at David, who did wicked multiple times with Bathsheba and the sentences later on, and a couple other times he messed up. But it says, "I have sinned." And God says, "You weren't to take punishment for it because it is what you're going to do, but it's not going to be as severe." And this has been an issue we see from the beginning of time till today, especially, where we see that people are wanting to not take accountability, that they would rather just say, "Well, it's her fault, it's his fault, it's the situation I'm in," you know, trying to find any blame but themselves. And really, in the short term, yeah, sure, you to escape this punishment or that consequence, but long term, it's worth for ourselves. We need to make sure that we are having the courage to say, "This is what I've done. I need to take the consequences for it, whether good or bad."
Anything else?